Peace and welcome back to For the Culture here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me tonight. Having a very important conversation about opportunity zones and the economic interests of Baltimore City. We have a lot of discussion in these mayoral forums and even in the congressional forums. But do we really know what we're talking about? Do we understand the complexity of these issues? And more importantly, do we understand how to gain power in the midst of so much money? These are some of the big questions. And then, of course, we got to ask the questions, well, who are the investors in these opportunity zones? And is there a level of transparency that citizens like you and I can really look to? Or are a lot of these big decisions just being done behind closed door meetings, and then after they come out, decisions are made, money has already been given, and the shovel is in the ground, and the community is left asking what just happened? So we're talking about these things, and we've been talking to the reporter from the Baltimore Business Journal. She's been reporting for well over 20 years in the city of Baltimore, looking at economic interests and business in the business world, Ms. Melody Simmons. Thank you again, Melody, for your time.
Thank you.
I'd like to go back to the phone lines. We got a couple of folks that have chimed in, 410-319-8888. Then we get some questions from our Facebook page. But then I got some other questions because there are some big chunks of the city that are, quote unquote, up for grabs. And we need to figure out how can the citizens in these neighborhoods have the say so on what is really going to be happening and what type of development and how will it impact them in these neighborhoods. So let's go to Dwayne. Then we got James and we got Karina. Dwayne, talk to me. What's your take? And thank you for your patience. Dwayne?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Dwayne.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Hello?
Yep, Dwayne. All right, Dwayne, give us a call right back. We want to make sure that we get you in. Let's go to new caller, Karina. Karina, thank you so much for checking in. What's your take?
Hi. So for those of us who may not understand, there is a black butterfly and a white L in Baltimore, terminology that we may not be familiar with. So right now, as we know historically, Baltimore had 1 million people living here. Now we're at 600,000, a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
African Americans, those who are in these communities, are going to have to pool their money. They're not coming to save. You're going to have to save yourself. They're moving at a trajectory to move you out of the way. The ambivalence about giving information is to make sure that you don't have a seat at the table. We already know how this played out. It played out in New York City. It played out in Chicago. It's played out in Atlanta. There's no difference. Historically, let's look at it, look at the context of it, let's start moving in that trajectory. It may take 1,000 of us to put up $100 to get that $1 million buy-in, but that's all we're going to need to do. Because right now, the lip service is all it is. If you don't come to the table with money, you're going to be left out. Now, what they're doing, what Baltimore Homecoming did, is they bring back individuals who have money, and they talk about what is going to happen. This started in 1984. This is now in phase three. This train is moving. Whether you like it or not, it is moving. We are going to look like D.C. in a minute because there's no housing in D.C. They're coming to Baltimore. We have enough housing. They've let it sit long enough to where these chemical plants will no longer pose a threat to be built on, and now they're building. We're going to have to move with money. This ain't lip service. This is money. 1,000 people, $100. Start your own development company. Stop waiting for politicians who will benefit to do what you need to do for yourself. We all have $1,000. Let's get together and talk about that. The rest of it is irrelevant. You will be removed from the process if you don't have money to play a game. That's all I got to say.
Karina, thank you so much for checking in. James from South Baltimore, what's your take on this as we talk about opportunity zones with Melody Simmons?
Hey, how you doing, Faraj?
I'm good.
I always try to get something right. You know what? What we should do is call 100 black businesses. 100 black businesses. We need to start like 100 black businesses of our own with leaders and people that know business, hands-on, that can teach other brothers to do business and sisters to do business. But as far as the way they set this thing up is, you know, I'm in the trades, right?
Yeah.
And you talking about, you know, $900 million. That's a lot of electric. You know, that's a lot of plumbing. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm looking at it like that, right? I'm saying, like, what is my, you know, I know what my capacity is now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know what we can do. My Luke, me and my guys can do now. So we just want, we get a little bit of it. You know, if we get 0.001% of $9 million, that don't seem like a lot. That's like $900,000.
Right.
For 1 year's work. That me and my other four journeymen can live off of really good.
I think there's
So I look at it like that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the city is going to help as far as any MBEs putting their foot down and saying no. You got to give $300 million of that to minorities.
I hear you.
Third.
I hear you.
Because they got the backbone of a no bone.
Mm. Hey, James, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for checking in from South Baltimore. Melody?
Well, there is an effort to get local participation from the trades, like James mentioned, and I know that it is a priority. And so, James, I urge you to call to the Housing Authority and to the City Department of Housing. These are the two agencies that are spearheading this.
Right.
And speak with them about this project, Perkins Somerset, and about your local participation.
So what, as far as you know, Melody, in terms of including minority contractors in some of these, first, what is the process? Is the BDC and the folks that are involved with these opportunity zones, are they reaching out? Are they having conversations with the community and say, you know what? Not only are we going to build it, we're going to also provide, you know, 20% of the work is going to be done by an MBE. Is that being done?
I think that it is a goal. I don't think they're at that level of conversation yet, because right now, as far as I understand, and but we don't know all the details, they're just trying to attract the money. And they're trying to get the money here first,
yeah.
And then the details follow.
But we know that some of your major developers from around the city,
yes,
most likely they're going to have it's either going to be a bidding process or it's going to be a relationship process.
Right, exactly. And I think a lot of these developers on these lists that are investment ready have done work in
yes.
Baltimore. Some of them have a proven track record. Some of them don't. So I think that it's incumbent upon the communities and the local elected leaders, the mayor and the city council, to keep an eye on exactly what's going on.
Has that been happening?
It hasn't to this point.
From either the mayor's office, city council president's office, or the city council, there has not been any real push to either stop this from happening or to make sure that it's in the city's best interest and not just in the business community of Baltimore's best interest.
Well, what we have on the Opportunity Zone level is the BDC has their czar, Ben Siegel. And all we know is that Ben is charged with trying to find investors to match them up, the investor or the fund, with some of these projects.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we know.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not transparent at this point.
And that's the big thing that we're missing.
We're missing that. And I think it would give a lot of the communities that are involved in this
sure.
and in the queue, so to say, would give them a big boost. As we heard from some of the other callers, they want it. It's a grassroots effort. We want to save our city. And so what I think this, if they were involved, if they had a seat at the table or a voice in the dialogue, they might be able to get out there and have some local investment as well. There's nothing that would stop. They would take $1 million into a fund. If you want to put $1 million into a fund, they would take it.
Well, let me just say that if it seems as if somebody doesn't want you to be at the table, then they're not going to share with you certain information. Meeting times, they're not going to tell you when decisions are being made.
Right, and we're not at that level yet, I don't think. I mean, can't get answers on what's happening. And I don't know how it's going here. You kind of wonder, is this whole program slowed down a little bit? I don't know.
Mm.
I can't answer that. I do. I will say that I did talk to them in December, the BDC, and they said their phone was ringing a lot. That's all they said.
Okay.
I don't know who's calling. I don't know what they're calling about. But
well, hopefully we
ringing.
Can get some answers. Let's go back to the phone line, 410-319-8888, Tian, and then Dwayne. Tian, thank you so much for checking in. What's your question or your comment?
Hey, so I had a question and a comment.
Yeah.
First, my question is regarding the tax breaks. I believe it was mentioned that if an organization or a company gave $1 million to one of these OZs, that for 10 years they wouldn't pay taxes. My question is, is it that they wouldn't pay taxes on that $1 million in your example, or that they wouldn't pay taxes on any profits at all for 10 years?
If it is a capital gain, if you are investing what you've earned, like gravy off the top, and you're taking that gravy and investing it in an OZ, no, you do not pay taxes if you can keep it in there for 10 years.
Mm.
You don't pay taxes on the $1 million, or you don't?
Right. If $1 million
say,
is your
capital. A company like Apple, they made $10 billion in a year, but then they take $1 million of that $10 billion and invest it in one of these OZs. Now, do they not pay taxes on the $1 million that they invested, or do they not pay taxes on the $10 billion that they made in that year?
It's a capital gains. So if it's a capital gains tax, it wipes out the capital gains tax. So the it's more a private investor. Say you have Apple stock and you sell 100 shares and you make a huge profit off those 100 shares. Your profit from that 100 shares, if you take and invest that in an OZ, no taxes.
That's the initial investment.
That's right.
That's it. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, Tian, for checking in. Dwayne, you're back. What's your question or your comment?
You got a question and a comment. My question, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So my question is, if we can't find out any of the details, you know, about how this whole thing is working and what the Baltimore Development Corporation is doing, why hasn't the media started screaming foul? Because we know where this ends up long term. But as they're doing things in the secret and not telling you and keeping the media uninformed, by therefore keeping the people uninformed, we know this goes to dark places. Okay, this is good old boy system 101. So why hasn't the, so my question to you is, or to your guest, I'm sorry, is why haven't the media started crying foul?
Well, Dwayne, great question. And I do want to say that we are still in the year time frame for all this to percolate. And right now, according to what we know coming out of the agency, is that it is still percolating.
Mm.
So these are just, you know, it's a process, and that's where we're at.
Ma'am, with all due respect, you don't create a huge program like this. You know, pump, you know, millions of dollars and something into it, mm-hmm. and create this big, huge thing, you know, and then, you know, say, oh, well, it's still percolating. No, that's not how Americanism is supposed to work. And that's why you, the media, should be crying foul right now, because we know the fix is in.
Well, I mean, that's the big question, though, Dwayne. It's like, first, the only thing that we can start doing is saying we're not getting answers, right, as the media. That's the only thing. Like, something is, we can kind of go on a gut feeling, but you need to have actual fact in order to report. You need to get that substance.
What you're saying is, we need to be robbed and taken advantage of.
No.
Okay.
I don't think that's the case. I mean, we're having a conversation.
I'm using hyperbole.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. No, but I'm saying we're having a conversation now, for example, right? So we're discussing this right now because, one, it needs to be discussed. We don't know what's happening, so we should know. But there are a lot of interests at the table. There are a lot of interests at the table. And part of that is, like, you know what? If we're going to jump down this Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole, you got to...
I know, but Faraji, you just said that a lot of interest is at the table.
Yeah.
But if we don't know... But hold up. You also saying in the same breath, we don't know who the interests are. We don't know who's at that table. We don't know what they're saying. Well, all we know is something is percolating. Okay? That's bad news. That's not Americanism.
Well, Dwayne, I have to say another thing that you have to understand here is these are complex, very complex transitions and also or transactions. And what you have to know is that people making the investments are looking at it from all angles. And they're looking at each city because this is a national program. There's a lot of opportunity zones across the United States. So if you have a fund or if you have some money and you live in, say, North Carolina or Boston, and you're going to look at certain projects, you might look at our investment-ready projects here in Baltimore and decide it's not for you. And you go and invest your money somewhere else, down mm-hmm. in Florida or out west. So right now, it's kind of a shopping experience.
Right. And really, no one has, quote-unquote, done anything illegal.
No.
There hasn't been anything illegal. I mean, it's just the simple fact that we just don't know.
We don't know.
There hasn't been a transparency or some level of accountability measure.
We haven't heard it.
Right.
We haven't heard it. As far as updates locally, we have Pastor Hickman out on the east side. He's trying to attract money. I think that he's might know something, but not a whole lot about where that stands for his Southern Streams Community Center. Mm. So this is something, the holding pattern is what's really causing a little bit of angst right now.
Right. But we know that there are some conversations happening behind closed doors.
Yes, we know that according to the BDC, their phone is ringing.
According to the BDC, their phone is ringing. Okay. Okay.
That's what we know.
Kevin, let's go. What's your take?
See that Goldman and Sachs, they gave Under Armour $250 million.
Right.
And then I looked at this jail job that was costing $30 million to not get no jail. Then I looked at it, it was supposed to be $300 million in investment coming in there. My other question was, a little bit of people non-profit in churches, because I've been reading the Baltimore Business Journal for a long time. Back in the Baltimore Business Journal, you all have a section where people file lawsuits and leave. And I was shocked to see a building that I was going to get. It was a church. I guess it's not a church now.
Uh-huh.
If you come in, it's a leave the building because I guess these people, when they ran these non-profit churches and other buildings, they forgot that they had to pay tax. Did you speak on that?
Appreciate you, Kevin.
I didn't hear the whole call. The phone was cutting in and out, so
okay.
I'm sorry. I do want to say he mentioned Goldman Sachs.
Right.
And Goldman Sachs has invested as a partner in the Port Covington project.
Yeah, because so, I want us to talk about that.
Yeah, it's not OZ.
No.
But it potentially could bring more money in. They are in an opportunity zone. But Goldman Sachs right now is a full-fledged partner in that development.
So that's the other thing because, we had conversations about Port Covington two mayors ago.
Okay, yes, we did.
You know
SRB.
What I mean? Mm-hmm. We started with Mayor Blake, and of course it continued with Mayor Pugh. Now it's died down in the media about
right.
that, the conversation about this $5 billion project. But this project was actually started because of a Treasury Department technicality.
Yes, for the OZ.
For Port Covington to gain the status of an opportunity zone. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, at first there were a list went out. This was written up in ProPublica. There was a list that went out about opportunity zones, and basically Port Covington was not included because it didn't reach the criteria from the census tract. Somebody in the governor's office appealed, apparently, according to the article, and it was added in. And so,
because the Treasury Department also said, oh, if there were some areas that was overlapping or there is a slither of land underneath of 395 where it kind of overlaps between Port Covington and an opportunity zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying, oh, because you are next to or within the boundaries of an opportunity zone.
They broadened it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. So what we have now is the potential for investment by fund investors or private investors in Port Covington. We don't know if that's coming along. I know that they're actively seeking it, as everybody else is. So it's kind of like a dialing for dollars right now on all these funds, all 42 areas in the city.
With Port Covington, it's $5 billion price tag that comes up, that's attached to it. They've asked for $660 million from the city.
In TIF bonds, right. And the first tranche is going to go to sale. It's going to market at the end of next month.
Wow.
So that means about $25 million is going to be sold in bonds to private investors. And that money will be used to put in sidewalks, plumbing, electrical wires, fiber optics, kind of wire that site up for development, because right now it's just barren land.
Right. There was a big conversation around making sure that there was some affordable housing in that part of town.
Yeah, at that time, when all the TIF bonds were being developed or being discussed, and this was led by the Rawlings-Blake administration, there was a pushback because of the affordable housing element. That was one of the elements. And there was an agreement signed, a community benefits agreement, that was signed with the six or seven communities down in South Baltimore. And it gave them a seat at the table. It also allowed their communities to have some development that would allow them to keep up with what was going on and try to have a piece of the success. The potential success for this development.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
I know. It's complex.
It is complex. But the fact is that you got so much money on the table.
A lot.
And that this affordable housing is not going to necessarily be in Port Covington, but it's going to be all around the city.
All around the city. Yes. They decided as part of the agreement that included BUILD, Baltimoreans United for Leadership and Development, that it would have affordable housing put out into certain areas of the city that would be paid for with a portion of some of the profits or some of the revenues from the Port Covington project. We're still waiting to see where those areas might be. The project itself hasn't started. So it's just starting right now, and we'll see how things spread from there.
So essentially, low-income families, low-income individuals will not be living in Port Covington.
They're not going to have affordable down there, as far as I know.
Wow.
But I will say this. These transactions and these developments are complex, and they take a long time.
Yeah.
So a lot can happen over a long period of time to a certain project like this.
Melody, when we come back, we got more calls, more questions. But I think the big question is that as we're looking at this upcoming mayoral race, looking at some of the platforms of some of the candidates as it relates to this issue, how do we make sure that the community, that citizens find some sense of power, some sense of say in this?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is so much money at the table. A lot of decisions are being made that, we're not privy to.
Mm-hmm.
But we still want to feel like we do have some stake and ownership of the destiny of our city.
Right.
So I want to talk about that when we come back.
Sounds good.
All right, folks, we got to take my final break. When we come back, more of your calls, 410-319-8888. And, of course, post your thoughts on my Facebook page at Faraji Muhammad. Stay riding with me. It's For the Culture here on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me, folks. We're continuing the conversation about opportunity zones, economic interests in Baltimore, and what Baltimore is going to look like. But more importantly, we have some people that are going to be coming into office. So what can we expect for them to say, for them to do, considering these big, massive, highly expensive changes that are being planned for the great city of Baltimore? We've been talking to Melody Simmons, the reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal. I want to jump back into the questions, Melody, because we have a question. Kenneth on my Facebook page asked the question, what's the info on the Oliver community in East Baltimore? Any info about that as far as you know?
Well, Oliver has been in a redevelopment phase for quite some time. It's located on the fringe of the EBDI project. It has received a lot of redevelopment and some of those row houses by private developers. And those are rented out, and they're rented out not at market rate. So there's a lot of potential for good affordable housing in there in a new unit. It's definitely in an OZ, but we don't know where it's going to go from here.
Is that, do you foresee it being a part of the Perkins Somerset Old Town redevelopment, that $900 million redevelopment?
It's about $1 billion, yes, by the time you add all the
change. Right, about $1 billion redevelopment. That's going to transform East Baltimore dramatically.
It's going to transform it, and it's going to turn that area north of, Harbor East.
Yes.
And all the way north to the hospital into one large redeveloped area. It's going to have a new school. It's going to look totally different. I have to say Perkins Homes is old. It's fallen down. And so that area is ripe to have a whole new reset in it.
So Oliver, pretty much, Kenneth, is going to be a part of the change,
The fringe.
It's on the fringe for some of that massive, massive change. Let's talk a little bit, Melody, about what we're hearing from the candidates. I mean, we have a lot of candidates that have filed for the mayor's race.
We do.
But my question, even when I was at the Morgan Forum, the Urban League Forum, is like, do these candidates really understand or have understanding about what at stake, and more importantly, how they're going to address this? Because what? Because right now, the relationship, and if we can, I want to kind of go back a little bit, because the relationship between City Hall and the Baltimore Development Corporation is what?
Well, the BDC, Baltimore Development Corporation, is a quasi-public group. And that means that they are a public agency, but they are run by a private board. So it's a weird mix. They deal directly with developers. They deal with development projects, which gives them kind of a different air of a way to operate. We do, as reporters, we're able to file public information requests with them and in some cases get the information. If we're covering one of their board meetings and they have to discuss a certain deal, the meeting is closed and we are put out. So it just depends on, what's on the agenda and how things are going. The BDC is really the vehicle for the city to have a liaison with the development community, with the communities themselves. They also do business development and economic development in a lot of the communities. One of their most successful programs is a facade improvement. These are grants that are given out to business owners to basically redo the fronts of their buildings and gussy them up, and they look much better. And so they have done a lot of community outreach, large and small, that way.
And the mayor generally, what's the role that the mayor has played in the past and even up to this point?
The mayor has a seat on the commission, on the board, and usually it is a deputy mayor or a high-ranking official in the mayor's office who sits on the BDC board for the mayor. Two or three meetings ago, the mayor himself came to address the board, but that was rare. I hadn't seen that before. And so we have a direct line to the mayor's office, but I don't know how how much communication they have.
And what about the city council?
The city council has budget discretion over the BDC because they do get some public funds, and they do have subsequently a hearing once or twice a year where they come down and they talk about their operations and their expenses, and they're grilled about their their outlook. So they have a little bit of oversight on them, but I really think there's, in the 14 council people, I don't know how closely they work with the BDC.
And I guess right now, when we look at the number of candidates and everybody that's talking right now, do you feel like they have a sense of what they're walking into?
I think that the candidates, there are so many. I think that these issues are complex. And what I heard at the forum from a lot of the candidates who were speaking was that there's a great amount of hope for the city. Mm-hmm. There's a great amount of hope that some of the initiatives to bring some of the success of the waterfront and the Pratt Street corridor in and push it out into certain areas, that is going to take place. As far as the nuts and bolts of it, I don't know that they understand and grasp how that can happen. Mm. It's complex.
It is complex.
I did a story last week in the BBJ, and it was about Southwest Baltimore. And that whole area, there's 7 communities down there in the Southwest, Pigtown, Washington Square, Union Square. And so these areas have long been ignored and are just now starting to get recognized. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they're located near I-95. And people, as one of the callers said, it's very economical for Washingtonians to move to Baltimore and get a place up here and commute to D.C.
Mm.
We saw that in Virginia.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of the community people say that they see down there.
My goodness, Michael. So this is opening. So right now, Baltimore is up for sale.
Well, it's up for redo.
Up for redo.
Yeah. I mean, it's always for sale.
Anything's for sale. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's up for redo.
For redo.
So let's talk about, you know, the residents, those of us who live in the city. How do we get our hands on this? How do we make sure? Because, I mean, we had Karina that talked about, you know, let's at least put $1 million on the table. But I feel like there's something else that needs to be added to that. Like there's some level of governance that needs to come from the people. I mean, if the city council is not have the if the city council does not have a working relationship with the BDC, do we need to put pressure on our city council folks to start to really get that working relationship? Or does residents and citizens need to start something else, like a business alliance or something? I mean, where can we get some power from that way in the midst of all these decisions, the interests of the citizens and the community members where a lot of these investments are taking place is not lost?
That's a great question. I think what we're seeing and what we have seen is that, and we've heard it tonight with the callers, there's a lot of people who care so deeply about their communities and where they could go. They see the potential. They see the need to come and have investment put in it. And I think starting at the grassroots level, speaking with clergy, speaking with elected representatives, and working your way up the food chain is a really good way to get answers.
Yeah.
Because I think the squeaky wheel always gets the grease.
Mm.
So if you're asking the right questions of the right people, sooner or later you're going to get your answers.
Mm. But we just have to stay consistent and vigilant.
Stay consistent, stay vigilant. I know that I personally cover these issues in the BBJ.
Yeah.
And so, read the paper. We're online. We print once a week, but we blast out stories online every day. So we have a lot of presence that way, and we're at the meetings. So, you know, these are things where all these developments are unveiled. There's certain meetings and permits that we look at the city level.
In all of your years of reporting and really, you know, your study of the economic affairs of the city, it seems like we're in a very, very unique place right now in 2020.
In 2020.
You know, I can remember growing up in Baltimore where, you know, there was the Inner Harbor that was the big source of money.
Right.
And then when we also look at the some of the other big development, Pimlico has always been a big area.
Big area.
For revenue. But I don't know if I'm seeing that right now, Melody.
Well,
I don't see one place.
Right.
Is that by design, or is that just something because we're in this kind of like weird space right now?
I think if you look, these are good questions. I think if you look at the big picture, Park Heights is poised for a big redevelopment. The Pimlico Racecourse includes in it You know, but as far as the plans for Park Heights, they have a Renaissance Corporation out there. Mm-hmm. They're working on bringing a lot of new housing out there. And that is an area that is in desperate need for it. They have, you look at certain areas that are anchored by big institutions, that's your economic driver. Sinai Hospital, Hopkins, University of Maryland, the Biopark. These are things that are helping communities really come back to life in a new economy and a new modern IT world.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and I saw that in the city of Baltimore, we have the top three industries. It's healthcare, education, and then surprisingly enough, it's like biotechnology.
Yes, tech is big.
Tech is big
because we have all the medical experts here.
Right.
So there's a lot of tech that's coming out of that. And also there's a lot of companies that are attracted to this area because they can get in on the ground floor and their rents aren't that high, like, say, in Northern Virginia or in Washington, mm-hmm. and build a company.
Wow. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. We've been talking to Melody Simmons of the Baltimore Business Journal, giving us some insight about what we can expect from the opportunity zones and other economic affairs and interests here in the city of Baltimore. Folks, I hope you've been listening. I know that there have been a lot of questions, and I can even feel the concern through the phones about where Baltimore is going. And I think the big part of this, that we, big reason why we wanted to have this conversation is to give us a context of what is happening in our city right now. Millions upon millions of dollars is being moved around, invested in, placed in, because at the end of the day, Baltimore is on a pace to becoming redeveloped, revitalized, however you want to. But Baltimore is going to change. Baltimore is going to change. It will still have its old charm of neighborhoods and that historic feel. I don't know. I'm sure that that is, again, in the economic interest of the city because we are such a city of neighborhoods. But will it have big moments? We talked about the redevelopment of Lexington Market.
Yes.
And, you know, the amount of, I mean, right now the market is at a $40 million redevelopment tag.
I've written about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So now when people have asked the question, so, okay, the market is being redeveloped, but what about the rest of that community?
That area is being redeveloped as well, slowly. But the market itself is the driver.
Right.
For that corridor.
Right.
Which has been struggling for many years,
sure.
Decades.
Sure.
So, it can only get better.
But for some people, though, right?
Well, I think there's a great hope that when they restock Lexington Market with mm-hmm. new tenants and old tenants, because there's a lot of tenants that are going to be absorbed in there, maybe most of them, that it will be a market for all.
Yeah.
I know that they're really trying. And I've had many discussions with the people who are working on it, and that's their goal.
And what do you foresee is happening to the low income, to the poor of Baltimore City, in the midst of all of these changes and all of this money?
I think that there are areas that have struggled, and I think that there are families that are struggling still. And I think that there's a great concern. I do hear great concern for those families and the areas. And I hear it from all levels, from the development level. I hear it from the public, the public level, also from the electeds, that everybody wants to include them at the table because their voice is important, too, because they live here.
Right. The problem is, and I see in my years of organizing, a lot of the poor don't have an organized voice, which is what's important, and even get at the table. The low income, the poor in the city of Baltimore aren't organized. And, you know, you might have, and I'm saying in mass, there are neighborhoods that have nonprofit organizations that come to the table. But I think the conversation still stays at a very, very, like, crumbs level of conversation. You know, you get $30,000 here, $50,000. Oh, we can give you $50,000, you know, $60,000. But, I mean, nobody is having, and as far as I know, please, I can certainly be corrected.
But when I hear $1 million and then nonprofit organizations saying, okay, we're part of that conversation. The last time, Melody, that we had that level of conversation was around the youth fund, the $12 million youth fund.
Right.
Right. And so you had nonprofits that came together for that to try to figure out, well, how is this fund going to be dealt with and how it's going to be divvied up and all of those things. But on development side, it seems like it is the Goliath of the city, and the poor doesn't have its David yet.
Well, I know that it's a work in progress. Yeah. I'm going to say that. And I think that the communities themselves, the people who live in the communities treasure them, and they treasure what they have. And so we heard it tonight on the phone calls. The people who called in, they want to fight what they have. They want to hang on to what they have. They're very dedicated to that.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Melody, we got a couple of calls left. Let me hear from Gene out of Pikesville. Gene, this is right up your alley, sir, right?
Yes, sir.
Talk to us.
This young lady's name is Melanie.
Melody Simmons, yes, sir.
And I turned on late for RJ. I apologize. I have to take my nap. You know that, right? I'm a senior, Melanie. Don't laugh at me.
That's okay. That's okay. Parents, I'm all in favor of naps.
You have parents, right? Okay, so I live in the Upper Park Heights area.
Okay.
And I just made an investment. We cashed in, my wife and I. And so what we're going to do is we cash it in, we bought a property, and then we're going to reverse mortgage and we're out of here, right?
Okay.
And so that's how playing out senior plan. And right now, did Tyrone Bose call in?
No, sir. No, sir.
Okay, Tyrone Bose, the Dollar House Program. Are you familiar with that, Melanie?
Yes.
Okay, so you familiar with Tyrone Bose. So Tyrone Bose is that... That person from the Bible that Faraji just mentioned. What's his name? The guy with the slingshot? I can't think of it.
David.
So Tyrone Bose is out David right now. And Tyrone, you know, I'm going to give you a tip. Tyrone has big plans. We have big plans. And what we're going to do is we're going to show out the mayor. Because the mayor promised us that he would meet with Tyrone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that he would discuss that new Dollar House program.
And so when you say meeting with them, as far as you know, Gene, what's the end goal of that conversation?
The end goal of that is for the city to use poor people's tax money, and that's out of the industrial poverty program, such as the initiative that Christine Flowers is locked out of, as far as the homeless and et cetera. And so the money that the federal government gives to the state and that filters down into the city that Elijah Cummings, gracefully got for us, that went through the board the board that controls the budget in Baltimore.
Yes, the Board of Estimates.
The Board of Estimates, right. Mm-hmm. And so that money magically disappears and never makes it in the poor community. So you hear me where I'm coming from, Melanie? And so Tyrone, what he wants to do is use that money and the tax money that the city has, and then guess what? Finance housing for the poor. And that's the direction that we're moving in. The mayor's a good guy. He wanted to meet with us, but I guess it's just not politically, the thing to do right now.
Well, I think, and you know what, it'll be interesting to hear from Tyrone because...
Yes, let Tyrone come on. I hope he's...
No, that's not a problem. You know, I think, Gene, when we have conversations like that, and I appreciate you, Gene, as always. When we have conversations like that, one of the big rules about community organizing, I'll never forget this, Melody.
Mm-hmm.
They said that anytime you sit down with a person of power, you never go into the conversation by yourself. You never go into that room by yourself. And so it will be interesting that if you're talking about a massive project of bringing housing to low income and to the poor, to working poor, however you want to describe our citizens, that you have a conversation with some other folks to give you the support and the power that you need, because one voice in those conversations sounds good on paper. Mm-hmm. But when you're sitting across the boardroom, when you sit across the conference room with other interests, that voice is not heard at all.
Well, I think right now, with all the candidates for mayor, and we're in the primary season, these are great times to ask these questions of the candidates.
I agree.
And I think I urge you, I know there's going to be a lot of forums and debates, and hopefully they will take comments from the audience. If not, write it down and find one of the mayor's representatives at these things. Give them the piece of paper with your name and your contact information on it, and they will return your call. They will get back to you.
Absolutely. Let's go to our final call, Khalik. Khalik, thank you so much for checking in from Baltimore. What's your take?
Yes, sir. I was listening to you talk about the BDC, and in that development, I'm over the years, I'm an elder, and over the years, I've seen the practice of exclusion, excluding the poor, excluding based on race.
Mm.
And I didn't hear the conversation of inclusion and the real planning of reversing that practice of exclusion. Rising, thinking that you're better than other people by not leveling the field and treating people really look humane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we shouldn't have this conversation from back in the 1950s all the way up to now in the 2000s, and we've got the same conversations. Think about that. I've been listening to this for a long, long time. The same game, the same conversation, and I'm wondering what the makeup of the BDC is. What is the makeup of it? And why doesn't it have a representative that advocates for the home people that need home, families that are in need? I don't understand it.
Khalik, I appreciate you, brother, for checking in. Melanie, you want to share any thoughts about that?
I do know the BDC has broken down geographically. They have a large staff, and their staff is broken down with geographic assignments for certain parts of the city. So whoever is on that geography, whoever is on, say, the southwest side or the northwest side, they have people boots on the ground. And so they are out there speaking with community members, mostly with business people.
Right.
So I do know that.
Right. And you know what? Of course, we don't have the time tonight, but we do have to kind of dig deeper in the fact that, I mean, we didn't talk about it, Melanie, but I'm sure it came across that level of redlining, that level of disenfranchisement that has been happening in Baltimore for far too long that has kind of dictated the policy of business investment and business development in the city of Baltimore. So I definitely would talk about that at another point. But folks, if you want to get more information about the Baltimore Development Corporation, you can go directly to their website of baltimoredevelopment.com, baltimoredevelopment.com, to learn more. And I agree with Melanie wholeheartedly. We have to have these questions and pose these questions to the candidates. I mean, if you go to a forum, you can make sure that you have some one-on-one time with the candidates, but either before or even after the forum. Or if you go to these forums and there's an opportunity where you can pose a question, bring these questions up. There has to be some civic participation that takes place in order for us to move the conversation to a different space outside of what we've been accustomed to, where Melody has been shut out of meetings and questions are being raised. Very good questions, but very few answers are being given. So again, it requires a lot more of us to do the groundwork to get into the space of getting our power back in the midst of all of these changes. Melody, I appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
Working on that people can check out in the Baltimore Business Journal?
Well, I just finished a big investigative series, a giant story on Harbor Place and what went wrong at Harbor Place. We looked into a lot of levels about the development, and it's about 40 years old.
Wow.
This July, it'll be 40 years old. Of course, as you know, it's in receivership.
Yeah,
it's
the mayor said he wants to get it, like, break it all down.
Yeah, it was set up by a charter amendment. No can do. So there's certain covenants on it and on the development. So it's right now in receivership. We don't know how it's going to come out of the courts, but my story's online, and I urge people to read it. It took 6 months to put together.
Wow.
Very comprehensive.
I'm going to check it out, Melody. I'm going to check it out.
Thank
Melody
you.
Simmons checking in from the Baltimore Business Journal. Thank you so much, Melody,
thank
for your
you
time
for having
tonight.
Me. Thank you.
Folks, that's going to do it for me. I want to thank each and every one of you for being a part of the conversation, both online and on air. Make sure you check us out at WEAA.org to get all of the latest news and information about what's happening in Baltimore and, of course, around the country. And that can be found. Oh, also check out our podcast of For the Culture and Today with Dr. K at WEAA.org. Stay tuned. Up next is In the Groove. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow for another exciting edition of For the Culture, where we'll have back-to-back all-day election coverage of the congressional election for the 7th District. Yours truly, Dr. K. You can tune in from Mornings with Mikkel all the way up to For the Culture, and then we'll have our very special one-hour post-election analysis with yours truly, Dr. K. and Julius White. That's all going to be happening tomorrow on Election Day. All right? Stay tuned. A whole lot of great music is coming up at you, and as always, make sure, Baltimore, that you never forget what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. Look forward to talking to you tomorrow, and as always, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.